medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the manager of business applications at Brightview Landscapes. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Hout Cooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul, how's it going today?
Oh, it's going pretty good. It's going really good. We're in conference season, right? So everybody's getting excited for Blueprint 40 and getting all their sessions put together and all that. So, you know, I think I mentioned that last time. But also, have you looked at our stats lately? Have you looked at our analytics for the JDE Connection?
I have. Actually, I did it this morning. We are getting so close to the 10,000 downloads mark.
Wow.
We are getting very, very, very close. So should happen in the next, I'd say, week or two. I've noticed in our analytics, we've had quite an uptick recently. So people must be enjoying the content that we're putting out, which I'm very excited about. And I'll also say to people, if you haven't already, please make sure you like or subscribe to our podcast if you are enjoying it.
Yes, please do. Please do. And that goes for people in my organization too, because I just found out that some people have been talking to members of their team and they didn't even know we were doing a podcast. And I was like, wow, we've got an untapped market out there, apparently. And it includes, you know, the internal JD Edwards development team. But okay. Maybe that's what my old manager used to call things, you know, that's a management problem. Well, that might truly be a management issue. But anyway, so yay for almost 10,000. I mean, that will be obviously a milestone. I'm not sure what our goal was. I'm not sure that we ever set one. All I know is this is probably bigger, faster, broader than we thought we were ever going to hit. So this is awesome.
Yes, it is very exciting. I agree. I don't think any of us, including Quest, knew quite what to expect from this. And it's been such a pleasant surprise. And, you know, the comments that we're getting and the emails that we're getting and the appreciation that people are expressing. I had one of my staff the other day actually bring it up in our one-on-one that they were really enjoying the podcast. They had forgot to kind of bring it up in prior one-on-ones, but they just wanted me to know that they were listening. They're really enjoying it. This person is not native to the U.S. and is really enjoying the Midwesternisms. She's like, it's really a great way for me to learn about some culture. And I'm like, I hadn't even thought about it that way. Yeah. But super cool to hear.
Yeah, here we thought we were just trying to be funny, but the reality is we're educating along the way. Hey, wait, didn't we want to educate in a fun and entertaining way? Okay.
Da-dun-dun. That was the goal. So must be doing something right.
All right. Well, what are we talking about today?
One of my favorite topics.
Running?
Processing options. Just kidding. Running. Yeah, let's just have a whole episode dedicated to running and we'll see how many people we lose.
Yeah, we're not talking about processing options either. My gosh, that's just rude.
I know. No, we're going to talk about security. This was obviously when we met with our panel where we did discuss security with Andrew, Matthias, and Nimesh. I thought it would be good for us to kind of just walk through security in JD Edwards. What is it that it does? What do we have out there? What are our options? And trust me, there's a lot. I don't know if you've ever pulled up the security administration guide. It's great bedtime reading material if you ever need it. And you will not run out of nights, I don't think, in quite some time because it's pretty long.
That sounds like a new calm session, you know, sleep story session. You just have somebody with a nice deep voice like a John Green come out and read the security administration guide for you. And, you know, we'll see how many chapters or maybe paragraphs or not even, and maybe just the introduction that you make it through. I don't know.
I love it. That's a great idea. I'm gonna petition Calm on that one.
All right.
You know, one of the sleep stories.
I'll make sure John's got enough free time for that reading.
Excellent. So this episode, we're not going to get into like the nitty gritty of let's secure our HTML servers. Let's talk TLS. Let's talk things that actually I probably don't know very much about. So that's why we're not going to talk about them.
Okay.
But we'll get somebody that does to come on and talk about them.
I think what you just said is the system administrators out there that want to secure the servers or the network communications or whatever. We're not talking that today. We're talking security workbench and what you can do within JD Edwards to control user access to applications, actions, data, et cetera, something along those lines. So we're going to make it applicable to that level, not necessarily a network level.
Correct. That would be a very good way of stating that. Thank you.
Okay. That doesn't mean we won't cover that in the future. I mean, we'll pull somebody on who knows that stuff better than we do, and we'll have that discussion.
Yes. And today we're also not going to touch on the UDO security. I think we'll cover that one in its own episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's a different beast, I will say.
Yep. Okay. Well, why don't we go ahead and get started, and we'll see how far we get through the security workbench today and all its bells and whistles, and whatever we don't cover today, we'll pick up in another episode. But, you know, for us, you know, we don't do YouTube or we're not doing video for folks, but if you don't mind, since pulling up the security workbench so we can actually see this as we go through, we'll walk through it. And those that have access to E1 right now, if you want to fire up P00950 and walk through it together with us, you can, if you're a visual learner, and that'll help, by all means do. So, all right, you've got the security workbench up, and where do you want to start? I mean, at the form level or what?
Sure. Let's start at that form level. Under that form dropdown, obviously, the very first thing you see, exclusive, inclusive.
Okay.
This is an option you get when you're first setting up your system. You get to decide whether you're going to be inclusive or exclusive. I can say right now, my company uses inclusive security, but I don't think that's how it comes out of the box, is it?
I don't think so. I think maybe I bounced this off of Clayton the other day, and I think he said our default is actually exclusive. And just for people out there that may not know the difference, exclusive, you're defining a range of values that you want to block users from accessing, and inclusive is basically the opposite. Let's define a range of values that you want to allow users to access. And, you know, at the end of the day, you probably pick whichever one meets your needs with the least amount of records and the least amount of overhead or maintenance, right? You've got to think about which is more advantageous when new people come on, new roles come on, new modules get enabled, you know, which one's going to be easier to maintain, and also performance, right? Because everybody's got to remember the number of records out there that you define. I mean, we've obviously got a process every time somebody tries to access a form or a row or et cetera, et cetera. You know, we'll get into each type of security, but the more records you have, the more we have to process, the slower the system. So just keep that in mind.
Absolutely. It is definitely something that I'm sure can make it a bit challenging, and definitely not something that you're going to want to just, you know, flip that little radio button from one side to the other. It's going to take you some thought and some planning and massive overhaul if you do need to make that change. So
okay.
Then next up under there, I'm going to skip the copy and feature security and media object security for now, and go down into the setup security. And I think we'll just start on, you know, at first I thought this was alphabetical, but then I quickly realized it wasn't. So
no, it's around. An order of priority, maybe, or I don't know. I don't know. Let's go with that.
Yeah, we'll go with that. But I think we'll go ahead and start with your application security. So your application security just basically allows you to grant or restrict access to applications within JD Edwards, as well as versions, as well as forms. So it gives you the ability to say, yes, this role, most of us are role-based, has access to this specific application, but maybe this role does not. So depending on what your organization determines is applicable for its users. For my company, we are, like I said, role-based. But for me right now, with the hat that I wear, my security basically gives me almost carte blanche, not quite, application security in my PY environments. Now, in my production environments, I can access through application security almost everything, but I have no ability to change everything. Everything is pretty much a read-only option. So it's good. You know, I can't go in and make any updates in production unless, of course, I use my IT update privileges. But, you know, those ones require a lot of approvals, and we use that very sparingly. It's almost like if it's a troubleshoot that we can't somehow recreate something in PY, I might have to log in with IT update. I don't do it very often. Or if there is something that does need to be done that somebody doesn't have access to, but IT has access to. So,
okay. So, I mean, at the end of the day, a couple of things I pick out of there. One, you have the option to do this at a individual user level. Many prefer to do it at a role-based level, obviously a collections of users then, and it makes a lot more sense, probably easier to maintain at that level. And then also a difference in environment, depending on what you're signing into, you can set it up so that certain roles, actually their access is different based on whether or not you're DVPY or PD, as we like to call it, production here. But very interesting. What about the STAR public role? How do you guys leverage that? I know we're supposed to be talking application security, but within the context maybe of application security, how do you use the STAR public role?
So STAR public for us, for application security, is actually set to run and install no. We say nope, and then we grant back at each role what they can have. We do have a couple, it's mostly no. And then we do have a handful of applications that we grant back to STAR public with yes, but we say no for everything and then grant back through either STAR public or through the functional role.
Okay. And then obviously functional role is exactly that, right? Depending on what your function is, if you're on the shop floor, you're going to have access to shop floor. If you're in field service, you're going to have access to field service, right?
Yep. And depending on where you are, we have, it's not just if you're in finance, you have a finance role. We have multiple finance roles. Sure. So some people will have access to AP, some will have access to AR, but you won't have access to both.
Right.
We have a lot of SOD rules that come into play here as a publicly held company. So
now I think of this as a hierarchy. We've got the applications. You mentioned versions, so I can relate to that. I mean, many of our applications, when I think of like sales order entry, maybe has the world record for number of versions. And it stands to reason that depending on your role, there are specific versions that you would have access to. But what about forms? I mean, how often do you go down to the more granular level of restricting form access?
We do go down to that. I wouldn't say it's our primary securing at the form level, but we do have some cases where we do secure at the form level, but not as many. I think our default maybe has just been, we'll just set up a new version.
Fair enough. Yeah. And it's probably important to note that you cannot set up form level security for subforms. So if you've got those PowerForm apps, you actually can't get to that level, unfortunately. I also noticed as we're looking at this live, you have all your batches in here as well. So even though we call it application security, the reality is you're using this to secure people in and out of not only your interactive apps, but actually your UBEs.
Yes, not only those versions, you know, your application versions, but your batch versions as well. So yes, we do secure as well the batch versions at the functional levels. So you may be only able to run a specific version of a UBE. So we do that security as well. Or we'll grant you, you can run whichever version you want of this, because maybe we have three or four different versions that do something just a little bit differently.
All right. Does that cover app security? Is there anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I think that about covers app security. The only thing I'll say is don't forget, if you create a new app, definitely add the security to the role.
Yeah,
I've been there, done that once where, I had tried to have the users test it, you know, okay, log in using this role. And they're like, nope, not working. I'm like, maybe I should grant you security for that.
That would help. Hey, JDE Connection listeners. Join J.D. Edwards users, industry experts, and Oracle for the J.D. Edwards Forum at Blueprint 4D in Las Vegas, June 9th through the 13th. To get the latest updates on J.D. Edwards features and discuss critical hot topics and build connections to help prepare your organization, tools, and strategies for the future. There's still time to save. Advanced registration ends May 11th. Visit questoraclecommunity.org/blueprint4D to register.
All right. So once you have access to an application, what's really next? Is it action security that you go to?
Yeah, I'd say action security is next. So you can have action security, but you may only be able to view it, or you may only be able to change it. You might not be able to copy something. Okay. So we do have a lot of variations for any given job role on if they can change, add, delete, see that OK select button, the copy and the scroll to end. Although I think our star public for action security always has the OK and scroll to end. It has those two set to Y and the rest of those codes set to no.
Where you want to do a generic, you're using star public and stuff like that. Interesting that, just for clarification, this is at the application level that we're talking. So we're really, even though we could think of these as add, change, delete, which are CRUD actions, that's database, not apps. Within our applications, we have, these are all hyperlinks or push buttons that are available within an application. And so what you're doing is, hey, do you have access to this app? And then if you do have access, what are you allowed to basically push? Can you?
Right, push, exactly. You know? Yeah, at the very top, do you see a green check mark? Do you see the little magnifying glass? Do you see the two little squares that are to represent copy? Do you see the trash
button?
Can?
Yeah,
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
Yep. And those are very helpful things to ask if you are editing security. You know, hey, this person got into this, but they don't have this button. Or if you're making changes and somebody's like, well, I no longer have this button. It is helpful to be able to communicate that to the users because they're not going to understand that, you know, oh, I had add security. They just know they had the plus sign at the top, right? They're like, oh, I had a plus sign. Now I don't have one. What happened? Oh, we had to make a change to that role security. It could be based upon an audit or whatever, where we took away that ability for the role to be able to have that security.
I think it would be good for us once we get through maybe this series on Security Workbench and setting up J.D. Edwards security. Maybe there's at least an episode on troubleshooting security. What are the most common questions that you get? What are the most common problems that you run into? And I mean, when somebody suddenly isn't able to see the purchase order, and what sort of steps, what's your default step one, step two, step three, and a kind of hierarchy of troubleshooting that you go through? I think people would benefit from that. But all right, so that's action security, right? I mean, pretty straightforward. I mean, there's not a lot to maybe cover there, but what's next then after I get that figured out?
Well, let's talk a little bit about the row security.
Okay.
And how, at least I can speak to kind of how we use it generically. We secure at the row level by cost center. So for us, we do cost center or the MCU field for those that are into those little.
If you don't know what MCU is, that's where you got to go to Lingo Bingo episode. Okay.
Yes.
Just go figure that out.
Go figure that. It'll be good for you. And then we also do it on home cost center as well, because we do currently have HR and payroll in J.D. Edwards. So if you have the row security for a home cost center, you'll be able to see certain, depending on what application it is and depending on a whole list of things, you might be able to see the home cost center information for a given employee. For us, that includes, you know, yep, I can see they're in this home cost center. I can see some payroll information now, assuming the app security is set for you to do that. And then we use the cost center because we happen to look at all of our branches, if you will, at the cost center level. So each branch is its own cost center. And of course, yes, we have people that have the need to have multiple cost centers. We did try to build some for us, I would call them like market and regional roles that combine some of those cost centers. Because as you can imagine, this gets big really quick. You know, it's not like we started with branch one and we're in branch two and branch three and branch four, right? over the years, I mean, Brightview's been on JD Edwards a long time. Let's just put it that way, you know. So for us, as we add new branches, it's not necessarily going to fall into a market or into a region in a very sequential order. You can imagine the row security can get really complicated really quickly and can get really big really quickly.
And so, and just a reminder for folks that this is really where inclusive and exclusive comes in, is it really applies to your row security. And this is really where we're talking about actual data at this point, right? So even though you're within an app, even though you can click find or you can click add or you can do a change or you can do a delete, now we're controlling what records you can actually see and whether or not you can view them, change them, add new ones, or delete them within the context of, in this case, a cost center or MCU, right?
Yeah. And I should also note that you can also set up the row security at the user level, at the role level, and at Star Public. So I had just shared, obviously, on my security workbench, I just pulled up Star Public so we could see what that looks like for what they have for row security for Star Public. And then, you know, we don't do anything necessarily at the user level specifically. It gets assigned to the user, but we never add directly to a user. I should state that. Of course, the security has got to get to the user. Otherwise, how are they going to have the access? But we never directly assign somebody a specific, whether it's application, action, you know, row, column. All of it is always done at the role level.
Gotcha.
Yes.
At the role level.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I wanted to make sure that I highlighted that.
The next on the list, or is there anything more for row security that we need to?
I'm trying to think of what would be really helpful to highlight. Obviously, you can adjust your row security at any point. We are adjusting ours, it seems like, all the time, just because we do have reorgs and things move around. So we do adjust our roles quite frequently. But this is one of those where we can definitely do some troubleshooting highlights in this area a lot, because it's definitely one where I will get questions. And for us, when we set up our roles, we do use a third-party tool that kind of accumulates, if you will, the row security. So it helps to optimize for a user. So what it does is, let's say we're giving you a market role, and that market role has 10 different branches in it. And maybe three of those branches are sequentially in line. Branch 1, 2, 3, branch 4, 5, 6, branch 7, 8, 9. But we have three rows in that market role. And what that accumulator does is it'll just put one line to that user. So that helps optimize. So it's supposed to help not slow down the process so much, right?
It flattens things so that you don't have as many records to have to process. That totally makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Consolidates, aggregates, whatever fancy word we want to use. You know,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I know we're probably coming up on time.
Let's cover column real quick, can we?
Sure. Let's absolutely cover the columns.
Because, I mean, you told me once that rows and columns kind of go together. So,
right? It's the recovering accountant living in a spreadsheet world. Rows and columns just go together to me. So we do use column security as well, where we will secure certain data. So you might have the ability to have some home cost center access, but you shouldn't be able to see salary data. So we will secure that column from you. So it's really, I think I'd say it's referring to the column in the database that you would have access to, because it does indicate the alias on there, which is a column in a database. In my book, again, rows and columns, right? I think in terms of rows and columns a lot. So we definitely use that. We have it set up at Star Public, and then we also have it set up at the various role, not ROW, but ROLE as well.
Okay.
So, you know, we might have somebody for Star Public that has, you know, they have the no to see salary, but a specific role that might manage somebody, and we do give them that salary information, or it's maybe it's an HR role. You know, most of HR is going to see salary information. Now, they might be restricted to a certain market or a certain region or whatever, but we will secure it at that level as well. And we might allow certain fields in a table that people can have access to. They can view like a tax area, but they can't change it. But we let them view it. You can see the tax rate. You can see some other information, maybe on the business unit master, for example. We'll let you see certain information, but you can't necessarily change it. We do use the column security as well.
Okay. So, I mean, again, just like row security, you're now controlling whether or not you can view, whether or not you can change, whether or not you can add, but now specific columns in a database, specific attributes, if you will, of a particular record. So even though the row security says you have access to it to view, change, add, perhaps there's attributes of that actual row that you are not allowed to view, change, or add. So,
right, exactly. You might want to maybe in the address book allow certain people, certain roles to change certain information, but not other information. Mm-hmm. So that comes in very handy for that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure people can relate. Okay. Well, with that, we got through quite a bit. We got through the application security, action security, row column, as well as, you know, a brief explanation of inclusive and exclusive row security. There's a lot more to go through. We haven't touched media objects, processing options, data selection, et cetera. I mean, there's so much more, but we'll cover that in another episode. But we can't end any episode without a Midwesternism.
That is correct. We cannot. In this week's episode, we're going to cover a term that Chris Laping brought up in one of the episodes, actually the second episode that we published with him. He mentioned the term pole barn.
Oh.
So a pole barn. Yes.
Okay.
So a pole barn is actually, I refer to it as a barn or a shed, but the term actually originated in the 30s when farmers were kind of facing economic hardships and there were limited resources. They turned to repurposing old telephone poles to build affordable barns.
More, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I know, right? There is a reason they are called that way. But since so many pole barns exist or sheds exist in the Midwest, because, well, it is farming community, right?
Yep.
That is exactly why it's there.
Okay. So I seem to remember one of these when I was growing up. Family friends of ours built one. And what I thought was funny was you think of a barn as, you know, maybe I got my tractor in there. Maybe I got my storing all my farm equipment, whatever. But they built it and used it for, he restored and repaired classic cars.
Ah,
right?
Yes.
So,
another.
you know, hot rods. And then on top of it, well, they like to party. So many a dance party was thrown with DJ and everything else in the pole barn. So anyway, I mean, they're not just used for farming. Let's put it that way.
True story. I have been to my fair share of events, parties, whatever you want to call them, in a pole barn.
Yeah.
So
weddings.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been to wedding receptions and
anniversaries.
Anniversary parties, family reunions.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yes, absolutely. So, all right. Well, with that, for questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at the JDE Connection at questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. See ya.
Toodles.
Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.